Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Welcome to This Song Is Yours. We're a music podcast that chats to artists, musicians and creatives on their songwriting craft and upcoming projects. I'm your host, Simon Fink, and welcome to episode 292. We're welcoming back the lovely Tim and Oscar from Holy Holy to the pod today. The guys are on to chat about their brilliant new record, Cellophane, which is coming out today. It's an extremely diverse and brilliant sonically sounding record, so please make sure you check that out. Before we get into our conversation with the guys, please make sure you subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever app that you use, and ensure that you follow us across all of our social media channels. Details for all can be found within the show notes of today's episode. Our guests today are Holy Holy. The indie pop duo comprising of Tim Carroll and Oscar Dawson are one of Australia's most beloved indie bands. Having four acclaimed and well-loved records under their belt, the band have never been one to shy away from mixing up their sonics and trying different genres on for size. Over the years, they've also been a champion for new and upcoming acts, having showcased newer artists across their discography as well as more established acts. Today, they're releasing what might be their most diverse record yet with Cellophane. It sees Tim and Oscar once again testing those boundaries of what Holy Holy can be, and it really does explore some beautiful sonic territories. In today's episode, we're talking to both Tim and Oscar about this brilliant new record and the collection of guests that they've assembled this time around. We talk about how they experiment with new genres and sounds and their creative process behind that. And then we also talk about where the band goes from here and what is after this record and what the future holds for Holy Holy. Cellophane is out right now, and we've left links in the show notes so that you can buy the record. We also want to say a massive thank you to Nick from Sony Music Australia for his help with today's episode. Here is our conversation with Holy Holy. Text me when you get the weekend meeting, so hope you want to dance because I need you there tonight. Welcome back to This Song Is Yours, Tim and Oscar from Holy Holy. Gentlemen, hello. How are we?
Good, thanks. Good to be with you.
Thanks, Simon. We're good, yeah.
That's very good to hear. Whereabouts are we finding you today? I know that you're both usually kind of separated by the, the Tasman Sea? I'm terrible with oceans.
The Bass Strait. I think the Tasman separates Australia from New Zealand, doesn't it?
I think you might be right. I think I had my a body of water that was close by, but not the right one. So where are we finding you together today?
But they're all joined up. It's the same water, really, you know.
We're in the belly of the beast here. We're at Sony Records, baby, where the magic happens. Yeah, we're at the label, the major label.
We're at the place where dreams are made and broken in Sydney.
Yeah, so we're signed to like this small label, Wunderlich, but Wunderlich are a subsidiary of Sony. So we have some friends and people who help us, you know, make the records and get the records out to people here at Sony. So we're here doing a bunch of talking about music today.
Well, we very much appreciate you allowing us to join that list of people that you're chatting to about music and this brand new record that is. It will be announced and it'll be out by the time that this conversation is aired, but you've got a brand new record called Cellophane out this week. So congratulations, firstly.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Of course. How are you feeling? I know that this is the fifth Holy Holy record, so not the first time around. Are there still nerves? Are there any traditions when it comes to releasing music within the band?
you know, it's a bit funny these days because, like, because there's so many singles and streaming songs that come out before the actual album drops. Because we were chatting earlier about having, like, listening parties when the record comes out to get fans together and, like, play the songs for the first time. But I did find myself thinking, right, okay, what's left of the record that people won't have heard? But I think we're both getting better at trying not to, like, judge ourselves, like, too much on what other people think and not to, like, get too lost in the comment threads of various people who maybe wanted us to make the first record five times. And, you know, just enjoy the process of making art that moves us and allow and trusting that that music will find its audience maybe.
100%. Do you tend to get a lot of requests requesting, I guess, the first record to be made again and again?
I don't know if requests is the right word, but, you know, to be honest, if people are on our social media page commenting on something we've done, I'm almost like a bit just stoked because it's like they've taken the effort to kind of, you know, be there and care. But obviously, like, well, it might not be obvious actually. It is the case that, you know, sometimes you put out new stuff and people are like, oh, we should have had some more guitar solos or something like that. And that's, I mean, I understand that's like, you know, I remember with some bands that I would have loved over the years being a bit like, oh, I wish they had some more like of that or something else that was similar to something I'd already heard. But I just think that, I don't know, I feel like we just have to do what we do and keep moving forward and, you know, making music that makes us feel, I suppose, you know, whatever that may be. And I think that you can't always choose what that is exactly, you know. And so, to be honest, like, I'm really generally like our fans are really great. I mean, I feel like we've got a really good bond with our fans. And so it's always really wonderful when we put out music and especially when we get to go on the road and tour it and actually, you know, see people's faces and sometimes meet people in the flesh. It's always really great, actually, you know.
The record is, I want to say that, in terms of, I guess, talking about not making the same record twice, this is the probably most sonically forward-stepping record that I've heard from Holy Holy. And I think that's saying something because you're not known for repeating the same record. Cellophane is this, I want to say it's almost genre agnostic in a way, in terms of like what it's covering.
Yeah, that's good. I feel the same way. And I haven't heard anyone say that, but it's true. And it, you know, it tells me that you've heard it and listened to it the way that we kind of hoped that people would. We did kind of, I guess there was a couple of points when we were making the songs. I mean, I feel like there's little gangs of songs on the record. Like the beginning of the record's a bit more like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then it starts just being like, well, what the fuck is this song? And we did kind of a couple of times, like sort of Oscar and I kind of narrowed our eyes and looked at each other across the studio and we were like, what are we going to do about this? Like, and how do these songs sit together? And ultimately we just decided that we didn't mind. And we wanted to like allow the song, just allow each song to be what it, like we both had a sense of what the song wanted to be. And we were like, we're just going to allow these songs to be what they are. And that's like a freedom that we have as artists. And especially in this age of like, you know, streaming and online, it's like, well, we can do that if we want to. And maybe listeners will enjoy that experience of like a really diverse sounding record. We'll see.
100%. Is it, are there ever any conversations when in the studio? And I know you've just kind of touched on it then, but like, I guess as an album cycle wraps up, I know that the previous record, I think the last time we had you on the podcast, you were about to release Hello, My Beautiful World. When that album cycle wraps up, is there ever a discussion of what the next is going to be in terms of ideas or sonics, or is it just kind of you get to it when you're in the studio and creating it?
It's generally, I do think that things tend to be a bit more amorphous in reality, i.e. I never have a, you know, people in the world talk about album cycles and so on. I never have a sense of when a cycle ends and the next one begins. It's sort of a bit more kind of a gradient between things. And so it doesn't, you know, like we certainly have like moments where we'll, you know, clock that, okay, we've just finished a tour and we'll, you know, we might have a celebration, for example. And obviously we talk about what we're up to in a broad sense, but like, yeah, it does, you know, we're often flowing from one thing into the next. And I think that the big theme that we've had kind of as we've been going along from album to album is that we have got progressively more into kind of production in the computer, trying to make songs and sounds that are more danceable. And on this album, as with Hello My Beautiful World, our last one, but especially on this one, is working more collaboratively with other people, other feature artists and producers. And I mean, I think that we both kind of, I don't know if we discussed it, maybe we did, but we've, I don't know, or do we just intuit that we both wanted to do that?
Yeah, it's funny, like, because on other records we have had a bit more of a sit down and and like, oh, like, let's achieve this and let's try this. But this time, I don't know, fifth album in, it was less like that. It was more an unspoken kind of understanding. But with the collabs, I think we kind of basically got to a point, like anytime we were like, oh, could this song have a guest? We would just start like thinking, what about this person? What about that person? And and we were both, and then Oscar would be like, yes, send them an email, DM them, get into their Instagram DMs and see, and, you know, and we sent off all kinds of things.
Excellent. Yeah.
And the people that are on the record are the people who, I guess, we have some kind of personal connection with, or people who heard the music and were excited to be a part of the project. And, and oftentimes that, you know, the collabs came together really, easily, actually.
100%. For the record, there is quite an eclectic guest list. I feel that you've got a few good Australian artists on there. I think there was Tia Carrez. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, Tia Carrez. Yep.
Carrez, who's this incredible kind of UK rapper, but it's almost like spoken word. And then one track that I loved as well was the one featuring Many Voices Speak, which is, I listened to the album a few times and we were very lucky enough to have listened to it beforehand. So thank you for that. I wasn't expecting that track to close out the album just after having listened to sonically these incredible massive worlds. And then that just seems almost worlds away from the rest of the album.
Yeah. I mean, so Many Voices Speak is a Swedish artist. And that's in some ways a product of Tim. In terms of, you know, Tim speaks Swedish and has a connection to the country. And I think we were working on that song. I can't remember what happened. I think that was one of these songs where the song just like, it was like riding a horse that bolted, you know, it just started absolutely galloping. And we were like, okay, we've got to try and stay on this horse and write the song as it's kind of happening in front of us. And so, you know, there's like Tim has this kind of this idea for this crazy intro, which is almost like Kanye West inspired with auto-tune and like almost like a gospel sounding organ and like kind of like a religious kind of church sermon thing. Then going into this kind of melancholy and sort of almost like Flaming Lips inspired kind of song about, I guess, saying goodbye, right? Saying goodbye to a place. And then Tim was like, why don't I sing a verse in Swedish? And so at some level, I'm just trying to like hold on to the reins and just kind of like, all right, let's do a verse. Fuck it. We'll do a verse in Swedish. I don't know. Which, I mean, I know. And you can't just translate it into English, you know? It's not like you can just go, okay, we did it in Swedish, but yeah, that's great. Let's just put it in English now. That it would sound wrong. It would sound different. Sometimes translations don't work. And it's a, you know, so anyway, then Tim threw some work at his end, you know, got in touch with Many Voices Speak and Matilda kind of did some work on that vocal and performed it and as well. And like, I mean, Swedish, I actually don't know what the words are. Because I don't speak Swedish and I haven't asked yet. But it sounds beautiful. I've always loved the sound of Swedish. It's like, to me, Swedish is like the language equivalent of like a kite flittering through the air. It's like quite a playful sounding language to me.
Mm. I think she says something like, she says like looking like wistfully up at the sun at the same place in the on the earth as you are, and looking out at the view from the same place, like being like we're here together now, and then like I dream about when we'll be together again here, kind of thing. Your dream and of iska be tillsammans igen, or something like that. Like I dream about when we'll be together. But yeah, I think one trick that one tool you have in your tool bag of like an album is where you put the songs in the track list. Mm. And so, you know, that's like when we have like we sort of take people on this journey, and so sometimes when we're like, okay, what are we going to do with, like, you know, what are we going to do with Rosé, this kind of like folk ballad song? It's like, all right, what if it went this, then we'll take people right down to Rosé, and then we'll drop people in this intro to Cellophane, and then they'll think they know where they are, and then we'll just go somewhere for the, and it's like with the last song, I feel like you can do whatever you like, because you're like, it's the final statement, and it's kind of like, it's a bit like an encore in the live setting.
Yeah.
And that's so, cause that song, it's about saying goodbye, you know, cause it's like these days come around, can't hold them down. And then it's like, goodbye now, my heart. So it sort of, it makes sense that it's like this big goodbye song, which I'm hoping that we will play last in the live set, and it'll be this big, like, farewell kind of moment.
I honestly, listening to it, it does kind of suit the, I would say, yeah, like an encore kind of track, the one that you're going to have a resolution to for the night, if you will, that it was going to be that track. We've also previously spoken to some other artists about kind of track listing and things like that, and how sometimes the last track does tend to be the final statement, as you said, but also we've found that there's a medium percentage that seem to almost indicate possibly what a band is working next on. Could we possibly expect more of a, I don't want to say like folksy sing along. I think before Oscar, you referenced the Flaming Lips, which I think is maybe a better reference. Could we expect that kind of sound on a future, on the sixth, the forthcoming, whenever that may be, kind of Holy Holy record?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, honestly, haven't thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do think, what, you know, imagine, I mean, wouldn't it be so funny to go back, like
just go back and like a full on rock record? Well, not just
a band, some kind of really instrumenty one, like a really kind of like physical instrumenty thing.
Yeah,
but not sure yet. I think there is something about almost. I feel like at the moment, it almost. Feel like we were not doing justice to this album. At the moment, my head's really in this record, and I just want to like see it out, and then maybe, yeah, like look within and see, you know, what's going to make sense in the future. But it's exciting that we're in this position now where, you know, we can do whatever we like. You know, we can do,
yes,
we could go anywhere, and people would be like, oh yeah, that sounds about right. Oh
yeah. Well, look,
oh yeah, they've done it again. Another weird. It confusing album. Yeah. Well done, Holy Holy. Thanks.
But people do love Holy Holy. I know that the excitement around this record, even just kind of looking at social media on the singles that have been released so far, that there's an everlasting love for Holy Holy. I feel that you guys don't seem to be able to do any wrong, touch wood. So I know that whatever it does kind of come out will land well with audiences. Just very quickly speaking on the guest list, some of the ones that I didn't mention, we've got Tasman Keith, I think Bag Raiders, Kwame, as people would know. I know that there was a discussion of how you got them on the record. In terms of collaborators, is there something that, I guess obviously being a fan of their work helps, but is there something that you look for in terms of traits, or I guess what does make a good collaborator for yourself?
The truth, it's each thing is it, each song and each relationship is really its own whole world, you know, like like with Medhana, like we did that Like a Virgin, the Sunflower, Post Malone, Like a Virgin with her. And she is sort of from Launceston. And so like we have this personal relationship with her. And so when we were writing that song, you know, she came to mind as someone that, you know, it'd be fun to work with. And you know, I'm really excited for her future and so on. So it's kind of exciting to introduce her to our audience as well. And you know, be a part of her journey. And then with some, no, they're also from Tassie. And like we have, like, for example, we recorded a bunch of Mindful of Light in the Sumner studio in Launceston. We were like borrowing their studio for years. And like Teach Me About Dying is, we wrote on a keyboard that belongs to Jack from Sumner. So we have a deep kind of relationship with them. And then like Darcy Haven just happened to be in the same studio as us when we were recording, when we were actually writing that demo. She just happened to be in the next room. So that's how that one happened. But I mean, you could say sometimes I think we're looking for something that's different to what we are, you know, mm-hmm. someone who brings something else to add richness and add their own voice to what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a personality thing. I mean, you can't always know someone's personality before you might have met them, but
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think we've been really lucky. Like people we know, but you know, someone like Tasman, like he was, you know, up for it. He was keen, and it was really great when we met Taz, and you know, got a chance to get to know him and work on this song this time with him. And yeah, it matters a lot to us. I think that side of it as well. I mean, I think it has to. You know, you're making a song with someone. It's a personal thing. It's not just a cookie cutter kind of exercise where you kind of just sort of fulfilling an obligation or something like that. You have to kind of have a connection happening, you know? And it's nerve-wracking, you know, like when you get into a room with someone who you might not know and you're thinking, shit, what's going to happen here? You know, how are we going to go? Like you set up that mic and they start singing and you're like, it's like you first hit play and they're on the mic and you're thinking, what's going to happen? Is this going to work? Are we going to be like, fuck, this is awkward. Is this going to, and it was not that at all. It worked completely. Tasman Keith has actually got quite a sort of diverse voice. You know, he does his kind of deeper rap kind of stuff, but then he's got this beautiful singing voice, which kind of goes kind of sort of quite clear and a bit higher. And so he was able to utilize that in the song. And that was, it was really great to kind of be lucky enough to have that happen.
Mm. And to witness him working was really fun. That was in Sony Studios, the old studio. They used to have this studio downstairs at Sony. It was quite a beautiful studio, and we kind of clocked on at a certain point that because we were signed to them, we could get the studio for free. So we started like doing sessions there, you know, keep our budgets down. And And Tasman came into that studio and he, I just remember there were so many ideas, wasn't it? Because he was like,
he had so many ideas.
Just this and this melody and this melody. And we were just like catching it all and just like, okay, okay, okay. And then it was just a matter of like sifting through it. But he showed quite a few different facets of his artistic self in that song, which is great.
It is an incredible track. This time featuring Tasman Keith was one of my favourite tracks on the record, along with the Tia track, Two Minds, Two Days, Two Mornings. Absolutely love those. I know it's unfair to kind of ask an artist if they have a favourite track on the record, so I want to kind of switch it up a little bit. Is there a song that you guys hope resonates with fans more than another one from this new record?
I have some thoughts about what will, because we've got a bit of a track record that, like that song St. Petersburg, what album's that on? That's on Hello, My Beautiful World, isn't it?
My Own Pool of, no, what's, no, St. Petersburg's on My Own Pool of Light.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so like sometimes there's certain like songs and they're not the ones that tend to like hit people's ears straight away, but then like down the track they're the ones that people are like, oh, that was like, could you please play that song and stuff. So I think that Rosé will find its audience. It won't be for everyone, but there'll be certain people who gravitate to that one.
Yeah, but I don't really have any hopes for what might resonate with anyone. I, you know what I mean, like, mm-hmm. What resonates is what resonates, I suppose. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not backing a horse on record. And you sort of know, though, like when you play songs live. I remember when we put out My Own Pool of Light, our third album, and it might have been that the album hadn't come out yet, but we were playing a show and I remember we played Teach Me About Dying, the song Teach Me About Dying, which up until that point I was like, oh, it's just a song on the record or whatever, like you know, a song I really love, but just a song. And I noticed how the crowd reacted at this show, and I was like, oh, that was interesting. I wasn't expecting that. It's like they take on a bit of a life of their own, and in subsequently, that song has become one of the biggest songs of that record, in terms of, you know, people really responding to it. And I think I'm the worst judge sometimes, you know. And it's so nice when you play a song and you see it take on a life of its own in front of a crowd, I suppose.
100%. Well, as you said, I think that people will connect with what they're going to connect with. And there are plenty of songs to connect with on this record. As we mentioned, it is very varied in its sonic soundscape and the songs that you're trying to achieve. I do want to very quickly ask, I know you mentioned Sunflower just a second ago. Is that where the auto-tune for this record kind of came in? Was that the introduction or the bridging for auto-tune on some of these songs?
Was it Hold Up? I can't remember when we started. We did work with auto-tune on Sunflower.
Yeah, we did. I mean, it was a couple of different things at once. I think maybe Sunflower like had us doing it and trying it instead of getting used to it. And then I did a writing session with Somna and they do a thing when they're writing, when they're improvising, they have a bit of tune on, like, from the get-go.
From the get-go.
And I began to see, like, Tasman's, I think Tasman might be the same. And I reckon Kwame
is probably the
same as well. So there are this sort of generation of artists who, that's how they actually compose. And I do think that, so I was interested just to try that. And there is something kind of like, there's something really satisfying about it. And when you've got the cans on and you've got like a track going and you're singing with the tune on as you're writing,
mm-hmm.
it feels good and satisfying. And I think it actually a bit like maybe you would sing differently if you had reverb on or not, you know, you lean into the effect. And so I think I was kind of keen to explore how that effect would in turn like change my melody writing and my delivery and so on. So we just kind of like tried it. I think, I mean, I'm it's been a while now. I forget how many of the songs on this record kind of dip into that like effect. Mm. But I do find it interesting the way that people the way that people react to Melodyne and Auto-Tune is very like primal. Like, people would never react about, like just distortion, putting distortion on a vocal, or putting like a flanger on a vocal, or putting reverb. And those are all like sort of effects that mimic something. But as a culture, we accept those as normal. And actually, some people wouldn't even hear it. They wouldn't, if they heard a song, they wouldn't be like, oh, there's that and that. They just think, oh, yeah, that sounds like that. But people have all this cultural baggage with auto-tune, and it's all along the lines of like that it's fake, or that the person can't sing, and therefore they're having to rely on it, which I find really interesting. I actually do remember feeling that. I remember when I first heard Cher's Believe, I was like, oh, bloody Cher. You know, why is she doing that? It's so funny because obviously she's a gun singer. She's amazing. Like, it wasn't that she couldn't sing. It was that she liked the sound that sounded cool. And it's funny that we're this many decades later and there's still a bit of that kicking around. And even, like, if they hear auto-tune, like, we'll write a song that's, like, pretty alternative and kind of strange. But if it has auto-tune, they'll be like, oh, that sounds poppy. Like, there's these funny little cultural associations with that particular effect.
Yeah.
Especially in the last 5 years, though, I've never quite understood that. I feel like Bon Iver with some of his projects, Kanye with some of his, and then a number of subsequent rappers after that have kind of normalized it a little bit. And I think that, if anything, I don't think it changed. I don't think that any of the songs on this record became more poppy. I just, what was it? The opening track, Neon Street, when it was kind of like lightly flirting with it. And then when it kind of really ramped in, if anything, it just made me stop what I was doing and like listen to the record more, kind of hairs on the back of my neck kind of feeling. So if it's an instrument that's doing well, I think you've used it, you've utilized the instrument well. None of this pop baggage kind of bullshit with this record anyway.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, that's good to hear that you see it that way. And the Bon Iver, like mentioned Bon Iver, I was like, that's interesting, you know, because he kind of took it into that world, which I guess sort of sits a bit more where we are. But yeah, I mean, I had thought that everyone as a society had walked through that door and we were like just marching in the new lands where you can use Melodyne. But it turns out some people don't feel that way. But that's fine. Maybe they'll come walking into the lands with us.
Yeah, who, or not. Who knows? I mean, I can understand to some degree, like, yeah, there are certain sounds and effects that are, yeah, either mimicking something that occurs in nature, such as reverb, or are exaggerations, you know, of something that you kind of already might be familiar with, like distortion. But auto-tune is not heard in nature at all, isn't it? And so I suppose it is fundamentally fiddling with the human voice, which we're so acutely tied to, you know, the sound of the human voice. When you start manipulating it, pitch shifting it and so on, it's so very noticeable to people, I suppose. So, you know, maybe I can understand. But then again, like, after all these years of, I don't know, CGI and movies and, yeah, as you say, like, you know, since T-Pain and Cher and, like, it's, and it is, I thought we were at a point where it was normalized and it's just considered a part of the kind of suite of effects that are, you know, available. And, like, but, yeah, it is more normalized, isn't it, I suppose. But I love the sound of it. And there was actually more on the record than what we ended up with. In some cases, we did peg it back a bit. We kind of went, oh, let's just actually chill it out there. And like, we were a bit judicious because it's easy once you start using it to just put it everywhere. Because everything you put auto tune on, you're like, that sounds sick, you know? So in some cases, we probably did peg it back a little bit.
Yeah. More. I mean, that's why I think that's also perhaps why, like, I mean, and it's funny, you know, because one thing that happens is we write the record, you know, sort of like, going through and making all these decisions, and some of them are subconscious and so on. And oftentimes it's only when we do interviews like these that you start to actually stitch things together and realize. But like a song like Rosé, where there's very little effect on the vocal, and you can hear like the, there's a bit of like noise, ambient noise from my farm out in Tassie. And also we recorded for Rosé, we recorded the acoustic guitar and the vocal with one microphone in one take. It's very kind of like, it's almost like a live performance. And one thing that means is that you can't tune the vocal really, because the guitar and the vocal are together. So it's not possible to like manipulate them. And I think there was some, maybe there was some part of me at least, and might be the same for you, of being like, like, look, we can do this. Like, we can do it. Like, this is what the voice sounds like without as well. And it's just kind of like, you know, these are the different colors of what we're able to do, kind of thing.
100%. Look, I think that you've, in terms of what made it to the record, it did work quite well with autotune. Gentlemen, lastly, I do want to quickly touch on, we would usually ask our guests what they're currently listening to. I think last time, and this is back in 2021, I think we talked about both Post Malone and maybe some bossa nova or some samba music. I'm trying to remember exactly who the artist was, but I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, yeah, giving us what you're currently listening to at the moment.
I just stumbled across, you know, Tiny Desk,
mm-hmm.
the NPR thing. Like, I just, you know, sometimes YouTube just autoplays.
Yes.
And like one video finished. I was at work and I was watching something and then it finished. And then Hermanas Gutierrez came on, which is like, I think that's Spanish for the Gutierrez brothers. And they're just this two-piece. I'm not exactly sure where they're from. I might assume Mexico, but it could be elsewhere. Two-piece guitarist, it's just instrumental guitar. And it's so filmic and cinematic. And, like, put it on and go driving at night in the rain or something, and it's just, like, it's amazing. That's what I've been listening to.
Nice.
Lovely. Oscar, what about yourself?
I'm so bad at answering this. I've said that. Around the dinner table, I was just saying this to someone else just before, my wife will often play a lot of like Indian classical music or sometimes Indian pop as well, or like a blend of the two as it sometimes is. And so I like it when she does that. It sort of takes me out of my head a little bit of the music that's like in our kind of quote unquote contemporary world. Although a lot of that Indian pop is like contemporary, I suppose it's just got a different tone and different color to it. So that's been really great. I never know the names of the artists, which I feel horrible about. The soundtrack to The Bear, the show.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
That's such a cool soundtrack. I love that. And it's so like, it's a bit romantic. I don't know if the show is super romantic per se, but the soundtrack is, and it just takes me to a time, you know. It's great. Who's on that? It's Radiohead, but also what's the band? Wilco and The Shins. It's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of really obvious, but it's I haven't listened to those bands for ages, and so it just took me back, you know?
Is that like early 2000s-y?
Yeah, it's a bit early 2000s-y, maybe a bit late 2000s-y, and a bit of 90s in there as well, and it's like nostalgic. And in some cases, like with a band like The Shins, like I never really got into The Shins when they first sort of came around. I liked it, but I never really loved it. And now we smash it at home and I'm just like, this is the best, you know?
Look, very, very different choices, but all fantastic choices. Gentlemen, thank you very much for sharing your what you're currently listening to, but also for joining us on the podcast today. I do very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.